Hey, folks, this is Jake. You're listening to the Lying Media Bastard Show.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Hey folks, thanks for tuning in, downloading, hitting play on your MP3 player, or something like that. Obviously, been a long time since I've done the show. I'm sporadic about all of my political ramblings these days. They're all kind of stuck in my head. I don't have many opportunities to spell them out via the keyboard or the microphone, so I can apologize, but I would have to do that frequently, and that's boring to listen to. Anyhow, today's show, looking to talk about the teachable moment, as Barack Obama called it, the arrest of the black professor by a cop in Cambridge, was it? I haven't even paid that much attention to the detail. Oh, I'm going to stop now. I'm going to talk about that. Also, I was hoping to talk about some little epiphanies I had about the media after visiting Comic-Con. I was at the Comic-Con in San Diego last weekend. Don't worry, I'm not going to be talking about comic book nerd sort of stuff. You're not going to be, oh boy, this Wolverine comic. But actually, I have some interesting... It'll give me think of some ways of the entertainment industry and journalism in general, how those mix together. I'm also going to talk about healthcare, the healthcare, quote, reform, unquote, which I'm told now is being referred to by the Obama administration as healthcare insurance reform, because we will be stuck with those motherfuckers in healthcare and health insurance forever. And then I'm not sure if I'm going to play some songs in here or not, because a lot of this I'm going to be doing as I edit together at the end. But I might be playing some Beastie Boys songs, because I just recently heard that MCA of the Beastie Boys, Adam Yauch, that he's been diagnosed with some form of cancer in his throat, and I think he's going to be okay. But still, Beastie Boys are a great band. I've been listening to them for decades. You probably have too, and I feel bad about that. And so maybe some tribute songs out there to talk about or to play some Beastie Boys. So let us talk about the Gates Gate, as I thought was the funniest name I heard for it. Harvard professor Henry Louis Gates. I don't even know. Henry Louis Gates Jr. Professor at Harvard is at his house. Door is jammed. He and a friend are trying to unjam the door, unstick the door. Neighbor thinks somebody's breaking in. Calls the cops. Cops show up. Stories vary, but it sounds like the officer demanded to see identification. The professor shows his ID and proof that he lives at the house. The cop doesn't seem to think that's enough. The professor gets angry, starts saying, you know who I am, and you know, you're doing this to me because I'm a black man. Something like that. The officer arrests him, takes him downtown. Arrests him for doing nothing at his own house. So we have elements of probably race, class, and abuse of power by police all mixed into that. As we hear more and more details about the case, maybe it's not as simple, black and white, haha, I shouldn't use that term. But still, it looks like, you know, usually police officers are of a lower socioeconomic class, Harvard professors. So perhaps the Harvard professor saying, "Do you know who I am?" Sort of a, like, "I'm going to pull strings and get you in trouble" sort of thing. That probably didn't help the situation to calm down. But really, he doesn't have to calm it down. He's in his own house doing nothing wrong, and police officers come in. Seems to me, if you're doing your job as a police officer, and you're checking out something suspicious, you find out there's nothing suspicious, somebody's upset at you, you suck it up. Say, "Sorry, I apologize, thanks for your time, citizen." You know, whatever cop thing you're supposed to say, and go about your business. Supposed to be the man. Public service and all that. We all know that's got very little to do with being a police officer. There's that saying that absolute power, absolutely. Cops don't have absolute power, but in many situations they kind of do. You know, and just when it's just you and them, well, you know, they got the gun, they got the stick, they got the taser, they got the pepper spray. They got the power to put you in handcuffs and take you downtown. And what you gonna do about it? You know, you can't really fight back against them because there's much huger consequences for that. But I think that's what it comes down to, is this was just police officers do not like it when you question their authority in any way, shape, or form. I've always theorized, I haven't asked cops about this, I haven't researched it, but it always has seemed to me that it is, police officers know that people having the fear slash respect slash following the norms they were taught as children is what's probably their biggest defense. That is what makes it easiest for them to do their job, is if people just accept that they're in charge, that they know what they're doing, that they're allowed to do whatever it is they're doing. And I can understand that would even fit into, you know, dangerous situations. You're there and there's somebody with a gun who may or may not shoot you. Them having sort of a fear, you know, there's the law, there's the cops, I can't shoot at the cops. That sort of thing, fear of what the cops represent, that probably protects them to some extent. Because otherwise, anybody can just realize, here's some dude in a blue button-down shirt and some tight pants. I don't have to listen to what he has to say. Who is this guy? You know, he can shoot at me, I can shoot at him. He can hit me, I can hit him. I think cops are very terrified of that idea. Now everyone talks about the dangerous job that being a police officer is. It's actually, to my understanding, it's the 10th, it's somewhere in the 10th dangerous job in the United States, behind commercial fishermen, firemen, and convenience store clerk. All have more common injuries and deaths than police officers do. So we shouldn't give police as much slack as we tend to about the danger of their jobs. So, sadly, the media covered this thing like the personal spectacle that I guess it was. Oh, no, Barack Obama said something about it. Oh, what's the cop going to say? Oh, somebody issued a policy apology. Somebody didn't. Somebody hired a lawyer, like the next-door neighbor who called the cops hired a lawyer or something. And sadly, I think that's the way the human brain is wired, is to, we handle personal stories, interrelationship stories, gossip. I think we are gossip machines by nature. You know, I think when, maybe about the point humans stopped evolving, was we were in small tribal groups and it was important to hear stories about, you know, so this guy and this girl are dating, or, you know, they're a couple, so, you know, now you have the knowledge, oh, I shouldn't go because that could cause trouble, or, you know, learning, oh, so-and-so's father died, so I should probably be nice to them, I could cause some great upset if I didn't know that. But humans seem very wired towards gossipy sort of stories like that, and I don't think the human brain has the switch, doesn't have the... There's something there where we can't tell the difference between gossip about people we know and are going to interact with, and it would be interesting and useful to know, and people we don't know, people we will never, ever, ever meet. You know, I don't think I'm going to meet that Cambridge police officer. I'm not going to meet Barack Obama. I'm not going to run into Professor Henry Louis Gates walking down the street. But my brain acts as though I might. And so therefore we hang on, we cling, and then the media laps that up and gets to put a good soap opera on the television, driving out every other story around. I agree, Obama was calling it a teachable moment. You know, I think some people maybe have thought more about racism in police work, law enforcement. Maybe they thought some more about police abuse of power, but sadly, I think the personalities dominated in media coverage. So this past weekend, I went to Comic-Con, the comic convention here in San Diego. Got a lot of media coverage. Once upon a time, it was a convention about comic books, and there were all sorts of vendors selling comic book stuff, and maybe some of your favorite comic book artists would show up, and then other sort of affiliated genres and media, you know, Dungeons and Dragons and other fantasy books, other sci-fi books, things like that. And then it sort of grew from there. And as comic book movies started getting popular, it's now this huge event where there is still a significant portion of it is comics for sale, discussions about various comics and storylines, and talking with artists and writers about how they do their thing. But also the huge corporations which use some of the, you know, which also make science fiction, fantasy, you know, anything they think might be attractive to this audience, they have joined in, including, you know, your big comic book companies, Marvel and DC, which are increasingly making movies. You also have huge video game companies. You have huge movie studios. You know, there's, I think it was a Warner Brothers and a 20th Century Fox booth. And not really a booth so much as a huge square of floor with props and furniture and stages and giveaways and scantily clad women and whatever. So it's this huge multimedia event. And really the goal, if you're one of these big companies there, is hype. You know, you want to get these hardcore fans of sci-fi fantasy. You want them to see something that really excites them. And you want them to talk to all their friends on the internet, etc., etc., so that they're getting more for their advertising dollar. You know, they spend a little bit of money advertising at Comic-Con, and it's multiplied by all of the fans that want to tell their friends, start their own fan sites, post stuff on Facebook, you know, send the Twitters, whatever. And, you know, viral marketing, they call it, because you start it and it spreads without your control afterwards. So it got me thinking when I was there this year that sort of the nature of journalism, because I visit a lot of websites that, you know, have all the latest information about, you know, comic book movies, fantasy movies, video games that are coming out, and things like that. And they hunger for every tiny little nugget of news. You know, they will actually be on some of these, like, movie fan sites. You know, I'm trying to think of one. Superhero Hype is a website that deals with a lot of science fiction and fantasy movies and TV shows that are coming out. And they'll actually be a news, like, one of their news items for a day would be, like, they have now released the teaser poster for Spider-Man 3. And that'll actually be news. And then they'll show it, and all the fans will talk about it. Ooh, good poster, whatever. And I was thinking it's because all of these entertainment producers, they have complete control of the information. You know, the movie's getting made on, you know, studios that you're not allowed, you know, back lots and sound stages that you're not allowed on. The writers write the scripts in places where you're not allowed to go. They keep them secret until these things come out. So really, the studios, the video game houses, the, you know, producers, whatever, they're the ones who control almost all of the information that will come out about their product. So if you've seen something, you know, you're excited about, you know, a new Star Trek movie or whatever, you know, there's nothing that you can't know stuff they don't let you know about that, pretty much. And then there's all the crumb that's given to them. And that's what it turns this into a, you know, entertainment journalism. We call entertainment journalism is essentially public relations. It's marketing. It is, you know, as much as I read some of these sites myself, and I sometimes get caught up in some of the hype and get excited about, you know, movies and albums and TV shows and whatever that are coming out. But really, it's just sort of all of these journalists are sort of arms of, you know, propaganda of, you know, the, you know, PR industry. They're arms of the marketing for you know, for these companies. And it's not intentional. And I'm not saying they have no independence or that they are mindlessly repeating the opinion, you know, marketing these things. It's just sort of the nature of what they do. And I thought about it, and the websites that are more rumor-oriented, the ones that are spoilers, or the ones that have, you know, leaked info from wherever, from some source who's not official, who, you know, they're not supposed to have this information. Those are the ones that are actually doing what you'd call journalism in the world of entertainment journalism. They are investigating. They're doing the research. They're trying to figure out what's going on and bring you the news about, you know, Spider-Man, Harry Potter, whatever. And but generally, they're seen as the fans as kind of, they are the villains here. They're the sneaky, you know, Matt Drudge gossip mongers of the entertainment journalism world, when really they're the ones who are doing the journalism, while most entertainment media is just parroting what's been given to them. So I had that epiphany while I was at Comic-Con this year, and it really is shaping how I'm thinking about this right now. I don't know where I'm going with that, or if that has any intersignificance, but I'm thinking. I think it's interesting. Yeah. So, final topic for today, healthcare reform. First thing I have to say is the conservatives fighting against whatever the hell Obama's reform legislation is, and no one really seems to know because it's not done. My understanding is that a bunch of senators and congressmen are still kind of marking up the bill in the back rooms, so we don't even know what it is. So it's hard to say I support the Obama healthcare legislation, or I oppose it, or I don't even know how much Obama has to do with it at this point. It sounds like he's trying to keep things up with the appearance of bipartisanship by saying, here's what I want, go make it happen. But two bits of propaganda that the conservatives are putting out is, one, they say that under the new Obama plan, some government bureaucrat is going to tell you what doctor you can see. Well, right now, some corporate bureaucrat tells me what doctor I can see. Is it that different? am I going to be that much worse off that the government is in control of which doctor I go to versus the guy at the big corp and make a profit off of it? Don't know. And to be honest, I don't even think that's an issue. I don't think that we're not going to the socialized medicine that seems to work pretty well in most of the rest of the world. So there won't be any government, involvement there. On top of that, my understanding is in most countries that have socialized medicine, single payer, as is the new keyword, they don't tell you what doctor you can see. You go see any doctor. The doctor bills the government health insurance plan, and the doctor gets paid, and you go back home and take your pills or whatever. The other one, I keep saying, healthcare is going to be rationed under the new government plan. Healthcare is already rationed. If you're poor, you don't get it. There's your rationing. If you're rich, you get all the healthcare that you want and need and can pay for. If you're lucky enough to have a job that has that pays for your health insurance, you're covered. If you are on Medicare or Medicaid, something like that, okay, you got some coverage. Otherwise, you're going to the emergency room and paying a huge bill, or you're just hoping you don't get sick. Oh, and of course, then you're the people who have their illnesses and injuries taken care of, get a huge bill, and file for bankruptcy and become homeless. It's one of the reasons I have tried to pay for health insurance for most of my life, to try to have it, because I remember hearing horror stories back when I was in high school about some huge percentage of people who are homeless. It was because of just one illness, just one accident, and they couldn't afford it. They couldn't keep their home and lost everything. So those are just... and the other funny thing. the number I keep hearing is that around 47 million Americans without health care. But the number should really be much higher, because a lot of us think that we're covered, and when we actually have a big health problem and go into the doctors and contact our health insurance companies, we find out they won't cover it. We find out we're not actually covered. We're paying the premiums every month, and as it turns out, they're just going to not let us. They're not willing to pay for the actual, they're not going to actually insure our health care, one might say. Bill Moyers at PBS just did a big segment about healthcare industry with a fellow who was actually a former bigwig, and he was explaining he's sort of had a change of heart now that he's quit. And Wendell Potter is the guy's name. I forget what company he was working for, Blue Cross, or let me find out. Cigna, I guess. And he was talking about all of the tactics of the health insurance industry to make sure that people don't actually get their stuff covered and paid for. They had this one horror story here about a woman named Robin Beaton, who her story is in May 2008. She went to a dermatologist for acne. And then the next month later, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. And the health insurance company decided to say that she had a pre-existing condition. That somehow acne... I shouldn't even be laughing. That the skin condition, the having pimples, that was a pre-existing condition. That and cancer are, kind of sort of the same. But, not. They're not. So yeah, but she had health insurance. She was paid for health insurance. Had this horrible thing happen to her, and only after a huge public outcry did the insurance company do something about it. And that was months later, and the cancer was much worse. So yay, 47 million people without health care at all, and possibly all of us that don't have the coverage that we think we do, or we'll find out in times of trouble that we're not covered. But the the Obama plan, Obamacare, we don't actually know what it is. There is talk of there being a public option, which is sort of partway towards a socialized medicine, it's not even a single payer, though it keeps all the existing healthcare companies that do all of health insurance companies, I shouldn't call them healthcare companies, health insurance companies that are doing all the awful things that we're talking about, leaves them fully in power. It would just create another government-run insurance company that people could opt into. You could do that one instead, pay with your taxes, I guess, or what have you, and that would cover a lot of people who aren't covered now, and probably put some pressure on existing private health insurance companies to charge lower rates, to possibly offer better service. I don't know how much. In addition, if there was this government health insurance company, if it insured a lot of people, it would then have a sort of bargaining position to get hospitals, drug companies, whatever, to charge lower rates. Apparently, that's not in the cards at all. The pharmaceutical industry is so behind this bill, they're actually running ads in favor of it. The same TV character, the fictional characters that they used in, I guess, 93, 94 to kill the Clinton healthcare plan, they now are running ads with those same, saying, yes, yes, this is the insurance reform we need, which should be the hell out of you. If the pharmaceutical industry is behind this, not good at all. And I guess on top of it, the scariest part to me is they're talking about having a mandated healthcare as part of this bill, meaning the same way that anyone who drives a car needs to have for car insurance, it would say that every American would have to have health insurance. And if you couldn't afford it, well, I guess it sounds like there'd be some sort of, government assistance. I don't know if they'd pay for the whole thing or just part of it, but man, the private insurance companies would love that. It means that the 47 million who don't have health care would be forced to buy some form of health care. Maybe it would come out of their own pockets. Maybe it would come out of the government's, government / taxpayers' pockets. But all that money, so much of it, well, not all of it, so much of it would end up in the pockets of health insurance companies, and they would love that. But even the public option bill, which has other aspects to it, whatever the hell it is, it's having trouble getting through Congress because of a series of Democrats, the Blue Dog Democrats, the pro-business Democrats, who, to my understanding, they're getting the most amount of money from the health insurance industry. Go figure. It's bribery, and I've said that again and again. Campaign contributions are bribery. They just are. But I did have an epiphany sometime between when I last did this show and before, after. I don't think I've said it yet. That's what I'm getting at. Is that that's not where the real money comes from. If you're a congressman or senator, we always assume that's where the bribery comes from, is the campaign contributions, and that's where the corruption is. But I realized it's not. I mean, you need the campaign it's a form of corruption. You're somewhat corrupt, and you need that campaign money to continue staying in power, to continue winning elections. But a huge number of the folks who are, once they are in political office like that and then leave, they become lobbyists themselves, lobby their former colleagues, they become, sometimes they work on the boards of the companies that they used to regulate, and those things like that. There's these vast, wealth-driven positions afterwards that they can take, which will make them 10 times as much as they made while they were congressmen, 20 times as much, maybe not 100 times, maybe 100 times. And that's where the money comes in. If you can become a congressman or a senator or, work for some government regulatory agency, and if you are friendly to the people that you're regulating and things like that, you got a job, you got a big fat paycheck waiting for you when you get out. And I think that's where the real corruption is, the doing the bidding of your future masters, and keeping that in mind as you are legislating. So, I guess one thing, and then another thing I want to mention too with the health insurance is the issue, as I sort of alluded to before. Big problem in this country. Because insurance companies don't need to be involved. Obviously doctors need to have to buy food just like everybody else, and they want to get paid for their service. It's healthcare is, there's almost no focus on prevention. We go about our daily, and when we get sick, then we go to the doctor, almost, which is, in a way, it's almost when it's too, that's when we start taking care. Like, oh, wow, you had a heart attack. Oh, I guess we better do something about your heart. And, part of that is cost, part of that. We're going to have to spend money going to the doctor. We're going to have to spend money on medication, maybe, or, spend the time from work. Take time off of work to go see a doctor if we were going to do this more preventative route. But, and then on top of that, nutrition, exercise, these are big aspects that, about how well you do, you know, physically, how well you feel, that Americans just don't have much emphasis on, can't find the time. And I think that might be it. I think time might be a big part of this. I once had an argument with one of my graduate school professors. Well, not argument. It's pretty much she lectured me. I just kind of, probably half an hour. She was like, we're at a dinner party. Maybe he doesn't appreciate me lecturing him. Maybe I should change the subject and be quiet now. It wasn't. But, you know, I was sort of talking alternative media, journalism, that sort of thing. And she was arguing again, you know, for at length about how it wasn't the journalism problem, because there are all these alternative outlets and, you know, news magazines and whatnot. It was a matter of free time that the work week that Americans had, and plus the commute and all that, was so long that the people didn't have the time to take advantage of all the media that's out there, all the other news outlets and whatnot. And in retrospect, after getting over being bitter that she wasted, you know, a large chunk of my evening, arguing a point I was not. I think there's a lot of validity to that. You know, Americans are so busy with, you know, all the work they have to do, working extra hours. Well, people who have jobs right now, man. But, you know, 40 hours a week plus for work. You know, a lot of people working 50, 60 hours. And then commuting, you know, I think I read the last average was, you know, Americans spending about an hour and a half every day on their commute. So they don't have time for shopping, for cooking, sort of things which are really important, especially with the types of disease that are so prevalent in the U.S. now, heart disease and obesity and diabetes and things like that. So health's a much bigger thing than just do you have health care. And, you know, you hear a lot about, you know, how American healthcare, it's so high-tech and advanced, but, yeah, a lot of people still can't afford it, and a lot of the research that's being done is on stuff that, you know, maybe isn't as important as, you know, obviously, there's still plenty of stuff going on about, you know, research for curing cancer, but, you know, pharmaceutical companies, my understanding is that they spend most of their on trying to do something that already works. They already have a drug for, I don't know, the flu, let's say. Gives them huge profits because they can charge a really high price for it, and they spend their research money trying to develop another drug that does pretty much the same thing, but is different enough so they can get a new patent, because the patent on the first drug will run out at some point, and they will no longer have the exclusive pricing rights. So a lot of money going into redundant, you know, to fixing what ain't broke, because somebody gets a bigger paycheck out of it. So, here. I'm not even sure what's going on with the healthcare thing, but if you're interested, you probably should start speaking up. If people on all sorts of issues in this country are not taking any action or keeping quiet, sort of giving Obama a chance. They really felt like he was going to fix some things, and they feel like it's a little too early to start jumping on his back, a little too early to judge. If you're waiting for the dust to settle, you know, the big corporations and the political operatives and the lobbyists, they are not waiting for the dust to settle to see where things stand, to see what Obama has done and what the Democrats have done before taking action. They are trying to shape things right now. If you want to have some impact on the legislation, you need to get involved now. You probably need to get involved, you know, months ago. But, yeah, and then, you know, I don't know. I don't think things are going to go well. I'll stop talking now. I'm probably going to depress myself. So that's it for today's show. That was the one musical track I played today was Stand Together by Beastie Boys. With MCA on vocals there. Get well, Yaukop. Hope things go well for him. And that's it. I'll try to record more soon and talk to you all later.